Welcome to In the Loop with the Soup. I'm your host, Dr. Tremaine Clarity. This podcast is focused on all aspects in education that are happening right here in the Roane Area School District. Thank you for listening.
One. Welcome back to In the Loop with the Soup. I'm Marcy Pfeiffer-Soderblom, Public Information Officer for the Roane Area School District. We're here with our host, Superintendent Dr. Tremaine Clarity.
Good morning, Marcy.
Good morning. Today, we have the honor of welcoming Ms. Zealand Walsh, who serves as the Roane Area School District's Restorative Practices Coordinator. In our brief time together today, we'll just scratch the surface of what it means to engage in restorative practices and how they help cultivate positive school cultures for students and staff and adults that we interact with on a daily basis.
Thank you, Marcy. And again, welcome to In the Loop with the Soup. We're extremely excited to have you here listening to our podcast as we embrace important topics across our amazing district. Here in the Roane Area School District, where every day is a great day to be a Wildcat, we are excited to have Ms. Zealand Walsh to guide our conversation around restorative practices. She serves as our restorative practices coordinator, but we want to get to know the person behind the title and also dig deeper into this important work of restorative practices and what it means for the culture of the Roane Area School District. So with that, Ms. Walsh, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And so how's your day going so far?
So far, so good.
So far, so good?
Yes.
All right, it's going to be even better in like 20 minutes when we're done podcasting.
Definitely.
So before we get into restorative practices overall, you know, we'd love for our audience to get to know just a little bit more about our dynamic staff here in the Roane Area School District. And so just pick a spot in time and go as far back as you want to go. Okay. And think about your journey that brought you here to the Roane Area School District, but where did the passion for the work and the desire to serve students and families, where did that come from? And just start anywhere you choose.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
My journey into restorative practices started when I was a student, a middle school student. Okay. I am from Milwaukee Public School. I'm from Milwaukee. Yes. I attended Milwaukee Public Schools for a brief time, and then my mother decided to enroll me in the 220 program, which allowed students from the city to go to schools in the suburbs.
Okay.
So yeah. I was a middle school student and had not attended school in that suburb before, and felt as if they should have done better prep for the staff in the schools to receive students from the city. I needed to feel a sense of belonging. I needed to feel welcomed there, and I did not. And I was in that district for middle through high school.
Oh, wow.
And did not do well because of that. It wasn't because I couldn't. I just didn't have what I needed at school in order to be successful. My mother comes from a long line of teachers from the South, small town, where the teachers in our family, they loved the kids. They
Absolutely.
Hung out at the house. They saw them at the grocery stores. So this was a cultural shift for her, and she couldn't believe what was happening to me in the schools and thought that it was my fault.
Okay.
So as a teacher, which I never wanted to be, but because I got older and realized that I needed to be in the schools because I needed to be who I needed when I was a student. So I became a teacher, and then eventually stumbled upon restorative practices when I was being trained to be a reading teacher, and thought that this is what is needed for all students, not just students that looked like me, but for all students, and then really embraced the practice.
Excellent. I love that response, and you know, because it comes from the heart and comes from the soul, and our lived experiences really do really morph us into who we are today. And there's always that key turning point that pushes us. But I love the fact that you're taking what was a gap in your education and finding a way to make it not be a gap for the students here in the Roane Area School District. And we know we have a long ways to go. We are perfection is never the space that we'll ever get, but we can really be on that journey to try to get, have a perfect solution for our students. So really love that story. And, you know, we just have to sit down someday and talk a little bit more. I'm all in and trying to understand. So as you mentioned a restorative practice overall, and that's the reasons for the podcast today. And can you help our audience pretend they've never heard the words restorative practice together in a sentence, and you're doing that initial elevator speech conversation, or just, you know, or buying groceries and someone asks, what is restorative practice? How would you help them understand what restorative practices are?
I would say that restorative practices is a way of being. It's how you go about building, maintaining, and repairing relationships, with the emphasis on building relationships so that when harm occurs, which is natural, conflict happens, that when that does happen, you have a relationship for which to rebuild.
Got it.
If you don't have a relationship, you don't care as much about rebuilding it. And also, you are less likely to harm people that you have a relationship with.
That's a great response. And as you're saying that, and then because we work in the educational setting, we try to understand what it means in an educational setting. But the way you described it, restorative practice can exist in any environment. How would you use it outside of education?
Yeah. I use it in my family.
Excellent.
When my daughter was getting married, we had known her then husband a very long time, but we didn't know a lot about him.
Yeah.
So we sat in a circle and asked questions and found out things like he wanted to be a mayor. Who knew?
Yeah. Wow.
So I think that even with people that you think you know, you may not know. And if you thought you knew them, it may change. Things may have changed. Wow. When I think about my own girls and the colors they used to like when they were younger, it was pink and purple. Now that they're women with husbands, it's no longer pink and purple. But had we not have had that conversation, I wouldn't know those things.
Absolutely. I love doing that. I think about doing that in my household. There's a lot we should talk about. Well, the three young ladies that are, well, they're young adults now. So, you know, there's never a lost opportunity. I think it might be my weekend activity.
Okay.
Coming up.
I can help you.
Yeah. I probably won't need a script and a little support with it. So, you know, I'm familiar with the Verona School District Restorative Practices Continuum that include aspects like building relationships, creating brave spaces, setting high expectations, valuing voices, and sharing power. If you think about the things I just listed off, why are those pieces so important to being able to build, maintain, and repair relationships?
Well, building relationships is key, like I said before. You need to have a relationship in order to repair it. But before we even get to the repair, we need relationships in order to function properly as a community. And that's how I think of Verona Area School District as a little community. And each classroom is a subset of that community. And when you have a community or a family, you have to make sure that you are growing that. And it's not based on one person's idea of how that little community should run. So you have you are including voices in that during the relationship building. You're getting to know the students are getting to know you. You're talking about expectations for the students and the expectations that they may have of you, as well as staff. Even in the PLCs, the staff should be building relationships amongst each other so
Absolutely.
They can be authentic with each other and truly dig into the work. And with authentic relationships come brave spaces. I don't use safe space because I can't guarantee that the space is going to be safe because we're dealing with humans. But we can provide a brave space. We can make the space brave enough for people to show up as their authentic selves and do their best work, big and little people.
Absolutely. Wow. If you weren't inspired by the promise of what restorative practices brings, hopefully you're listening to this. You've come more inspired because it's moving me in the moment. And again, just want to express great appreciation. You know, one of the noticings, there were a multitude of things that we can name that we unfortunately learned during the pandemic, but also things that are ramifications that we feel still feel today coming out of the pandemic. And as I heard you talk about the importance of relationships, I think one of the things, one of the unintentional consequences of so much happening digitally and virtually is that we lost focus on community and being, we almost taught ourselves not to be around each other because that's what we were literally told, not to be around each other. And we also lost that space and time for that true connection. Even though it's been 5 years later now, we still see some of that ramification, especially with our young scholars that were, you know, maybe hadn't experienced school for the first time, had no sense of community, and then were come to a space where their first contact with other students or other people beyond their household was, you need to stay apart and stay away. Being the expert in this field, have you noticed any of those similarities coming out of the pandemic yourself?
Yes, I have. And while we were in the pandemic, I was working for Milwaukee Public Schools as a restorative practices coach. And what we were trying to do was to use restorative practices circles to make sure that people stay connected, even if it was virtual, so that when they got back into the building, it would be natural to see people that they saw on the screen, although we had to work harder at being together, because like you said, that was lost. So I think it's even more important now, even though we are a few years removed from the pandemic, it's still important to remember that we were in a pandemic, all of us.
Absolutely.
Even the students, you know, everybody was in the pandemic and it impacted us in a different way. Remember that, have grace with each other and really dive into getting to know each other and making sure that we feel comfortable in the spaces in which we attend school, work at school.
Absolutely, thank you for that. As we think about one of the reasons I was really passionate about having you come onto the podcast today is because while we know the promise of what a true system of restorative practices in the Vernon School Districts can bring, we also know that if absent of clear knowledge of what restorative practices is, a false narrative can be created around what the true meaning of restorative practices mean. So I think for our audience, we think about some misconceptions that students, staff, and families and our listeners may have about restorative practices. What can we clarify? And especially a lot of the false narratives we get are, this is purely a replacement for discipline and consequences. And we know mutually that not to be true, but how do we counteract that narrative and help folks understand what this really means for our students?
Well, I think we need to think about restorative practices as a way of being and know that it's going to look different for everyone because it is a way of being. My being restorative won't look like you being restorative, but there are some common things that we can remember. And I think because we are a school district, we are a system, so we have to have things in place like the progressive response model, which does embed some pieces of restorative practices. And one of the misconceptions is that there's no accountability when harm has occurred.
Correct.
But that is not true because accountability may not look like a punishment, but it's a deeper understanding of the harm that you caused and how to make it right. But I think what we need to remember is that it's not the behavior that we dislike. No, it is the behavior that we dislike.
Yes.
It's not the person.
Correct.
So we have to make sure we separate the deed from the doer whenever we are talking about giving consequences and making sure that students and staff are taking accountability. Another misconception is that restorative practices is going to be a quick fix.
Correct.
It's really not a quick fix because it takes time to build relationships. And people they think about restorative practices and restorative justice as being the same thing when it's really not. Restorative justice is repairing the harm. which comes later on the continuum, after building relationships, after using circles for many different things. But that restorative justice piece sometimes is what people think about when they think about restorative practices, and they want that quick fix, and that's just not the case.
Absolutely. You know, when I was a principal, when restorative practices first, I became more familiar with it, and that's probably just more of a decade ago. And as there's been, I learned the hard way through some bad leadership decisions in the past, but also just not having a deeper understanding that you just so eloquently described for us. And what I learned is that anytime I heard someone say, "Well, let's just do a circle," it was not going to be successful. There is no just doing a circle. It really is about the building of the culture, building the understanding, building the spaces. And a circle can be a part of that process, but it is not the conclusion of any type of issue. So those key words that I've just learned to listen for, into making sure, you know, the appropriateness, and also continue to lean on your expertise and those that you've continued to train. I know you have been leading, helping others across our district have a deeper understanding, cascade that learning. You want to briefly touch on that before we get into our next, just talk a little bit about the trainings that have happened?
Yes. Yeah. Last year, we had a grant and was able to provide subs, a lot of subs, mm-hmm. for the people that wanted to attend the foundational restorative training. And what we did is we selected school sites. So each site was able to send a group of staff members, not necessarily teachers, but any staff members from their building, to attend a 2.5 or a 3-day training. And in that training, we talked about the foundational pieces of restorative practices, including building, maintaining relationships, and also low-level harm.
Got it.
And to date, I have been fortunate enough to be able to train about 150 staff members. Wow. And almost every school took advantage of that.
Wow, that's a celebration. And also just a true example of the commitment that you brought to this work. So, again, I can't say thank you enough.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, just, but I wanted the audience to hear those numbers because that's meaningful, and that's not an easy task. All right, so as we, you know, let's put some scenarios in place. So if we could do a scenario of what a restorative practice restorative process might look like when a student maybe has caused harm to another student. Can you give an example of what they may look like and how that process may play out?
Well, I think it depends on the level of harm. Mm-hmm. For low-level harm, that could be handled in an impromptu circle. When I say circle, I don't mean a formal sit down circle, but it could happen outside of the classroom where the person in charge will ask questions like, what happened, who was impacted, and how can we fix it?
Absolutely.
And that is asked to all parties involved, even if it's a staff member and a student or two staff members. If it's a higher level harm, of course, we'll look at the progressive discipline model, but also making sure that if students are removed from the school, that we embrace them when they come back.
Yes.
We let them know that they are still part of the community and make sure that they understand what the expectation is moving forward and ask what they need. What do you need as a support so that it doesn't happen again?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, when I work with parents, as both of we do, and community members, there's a desire to see the highest perceived level of consequence when harm is occurred. And that we follow the model, and consequences do happen. And I just want to be very clear that they do appropriate in those occasions, and on 99% of the time the student is going to come back. There are very rare occasions where the loss of a full public education is the consequence. That has to be a very, very high level event. So the majority of our students are going to come back, and what absent of, you know, the practices or a process for the, you know, for potential healing to take place, you have two people in the same space that still have the same scenario as when the harm happened and happened in the first place. So just helping our families understand it from that perspective as well. So it's not being dismissive of the need for sometimes to be consequences, but also that extra step, knowing that we run a small city, and especially if you think about our high school, that's bigger than a lot of Wisconsin towns.
Absolutely.
And we want to make sure that we are running in a way that can function student to adult and peer to peer as well.
Mm-hmm.
So as we think about our desired state, and admittedly, as a leader of Vernon School District, I'll say we're not yet at our desired state, but we're on our journey. So what does a school culture look like when restorative practices are built and they're part of everyday routines and ways of doing things?
Well, first of all, I think that we know how we feel when we enter a space.
Absolutely.
So upon entering a building, we can feel if it's restorative or not, just by the way people are interacting with each other, the way people greet you when you walk in, not you as a superintendent,
yeah,
but just the general public,
yeah,
when they walk in, and also families. Also a place where students feel a sense of ownership.
Mm-hmm.
They know that, okay, yes, I am able to be who I am in this building, and I help to create this environment. I have input into appropriate things like expectations and the consequences for the expectation, as well as not rules, but norms and or agreements.
Absolutely.
I also think that we need to remember that these are children,
yes,
and we are a school. And if we don't allow them to make mistakes, when will they ever be allowed to make those mistakes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Beautifully said. I mean, adults make mistakes too. And we have to remember that we never stop making mistakes. And I think, obviously, we have high expectations and levels of accountability for our students. But, you know, there is not a perfect person that walks this earth. And just making sure that we have systems in place that allow for, you know, the inclusion. And I love that you led with that piece as we continue to focus on what are spaces that we have where every student feels that they are included in the environments that we create. And that journey is never ending, but we pride ourselves in being on that journey. And you are an integral part of that. So
thank you.
In closing, I want to thank you for being here today. Every time we engage, you teach me a little bit more, and that never fails to disappoint, as I learned more today about our work. And on behalf of the Brown Area School District, we thank you for everything that you're bringing to the elevation of restorative practice in our district. So.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to be, I don't want to call it work, but to be doing my dream job.
Excellent. Well, Marcy, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Absolutely. I want to join Dr. Clarity in thanking you for being here today. And just so much richness in what you shared. Some of the key standouts were that, you know, building and maintaining and repairing relationships is so important because we need relationships to function correctly as a community. And with you at the helm, sort of having trained over 150 staff members, we're hopefully well on our way to doing the work we need to do so that we are in a restorative environment. So thank you for joining us, and thank you, listeners. And we'll hear you next time and talk to you next time on In the Loop with the Soup.